For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm Douglas Floyd. I am going to be giving the Dharma talk this morning because our teacher, Taigen Dan Layton, is on sabbatical. He'll be back in October. And so a number of the students here are taking turns giving these Dharma talks. And so I hope, my only hope here is that this will help your practice and not run you off. I have circulated a handout that's an essay that was written in the 13th century by Keizan Jokin called Zazen Yojinki, Notes on What to Be Aware of in Zazen. It's actually a lot broader than that. You definitely shouldn't be thinking about the points he raises during Zazen. But Keizan is very important in Soto Zen. He was our founder Dogen's great grandchild in the Dharma. So there was Eihei Dogen, who founded Soto Zen in the 13th century. He was a Japanese monk who studied in China and then came back. And then he had a student, Koen Eijo, who took over from him, and then Tetsu Gikai, and finally Keizan Jokin. And Keizan is very important. I mean, obviously, there would be no Soto Zen without Dogen, but Keizan was very important in bringing about some changes. He's in Japan, he's probably considered, if not level with Dogen in the importance, his importance for Soto Zen, but if not equal, then almost there. He had some important differences because Dogen was very focused on maintaining the purity of Zen practice in monasteries and training monks, although he did train some lay people, and we have some of his essays that were directed to lay people. But he was very interested in bringing Chinese Zen to Japan as he understood it, although he then did make some changes himself. Keizan was particularly interested in aspects of esoteric Buddhist practice. So like Dogen and all of the great Buddhist reformers in Japan in the 13th century, Keizan had started out, had a strong background in Tendai thought, which was very involved in esoteric practices, chanting mantras, performing ceremonies, that sort of thing. And Keizan was very interested in feng shui, the equivalent for establishing temples and monasteries. So, you know, the ideals, there were principles set out about how the monastery would face south, and there would be a lake in front, and there'd be mountains at different places. So you would try to situate your monastery in a place where all of the forces of nature and the universe would be propitious. And Keizan became more interested also in founding temples, although it was really his successors who began to found temples that would support the lives of lay people. So they would perform ceremonies for the benefit of lay people, and they became heavily involved in things like performing services that would bring rain, avoid problems, settle down malevolent spirits and local gods and divinities that might be causing problems. And then they developed ceremonies for lay people so that when they died, they were after they had died, they were ordained as monks as part of the ceremony. But a lot of these practices, willingness to go out into the communities, resulted in the broad expansion of Soto Zen, so that it Soto is by far the largest denomination of Zen in Japan. I don't think, in addition, Keizan founded a temple called Sojiji, which and is one of the two main temples of Soto Zen. The other is Eiheiji, which was founded by Dogen. And there's a rivalry between the two of them that they're working to resolve, but it's existed throughout their history. And in the United States, we don't hear too much about Keizan, and I think that that's really because we are very much within an Eiheiji tradition. So Suzuki Roshi, who founded San Francisco Zen Center, studied at Eiheiji, and he was a very big, very enthusiastic student of Dogen. So we talk a lot about Dogen here, but we almost never talk about Keizan, which is certainly not true in Japan. So this text, Zazen Yojinki, clearly is either based upon and elaborates at great length upon Dogen's manual about how to do Zazen, the Fukan Zazengi, or it's at least, you know, it's at least heavily influenced by it. So Keizan goes at great lengths to say, okay, here's how to arrange your life to practice Zazen, and here's what Zazen is, and here's what Zazen isn't. And it's very encouraging. So his big focus is on staying healthy and don't get distracted by irrelevant stuff. So there are long sections on where you should live. So you shouldn't live near kings, and you shouldn't live near the government. You shouldn't live near rich people. You shouldn't live places where there's a lot of argument. You shouldn't live near houses of prostitution or concert halls. You shouldn't live near the ocean. I'm not really sure why that is. And the list goes on. And then how you should make your living. You should not get involved in arts and crafts. Yeah. You shouldn't get involved in arts and crafts. You shouldn't practice medicine or fortune-telling. You shouldn't get involved in singing and dancing. You shouldn't write poetry too much or write otherwise too much. Don't do a lot of calligraphy. And as far as your clothing goes, you shouldn't get caught up in wearing luxurious clothes, but you don't want to wear rags either. So definitely mend and wash your clothes so you don't get sick and don't get caught up in your image. And your diet should be, you should eat good food, not too much of it. And he has some specifics about that that are kind of interesting. You shouldn't eat a lot of rich food. You should only eat about two-thirds of what you would like to eat or at any one time. You shouldn't eat anything that's hard or spoiled. That makes a lot of sense. But you shouldn't eat anything that's alive either, which I'm not sure where that's coming from, because a monk definitely wouldn't be eating any animals that were alive, even shellfish, anything like that. So he also then really gets down to talking about Zazen. And what's interesting, you know, Dogen, when he was writing Fukan Zazengi, it's just a few paragraphs. It's very short. And he says, you know, this is not a conscious endeavor. Sit down on a cushion. It shouldn't be too hot or too cold in the room. Shouldn't be too bright or too dark. Adjust your robes, and then think not thinking. What's not thinking? How do you think not thinking? Non-thinking. Set aside your measuring mind. There's a little more than that, but not a whole lot more than that. And you kind of go, well, I'm not really sure what non-thinking is. I'm not sure thinking non-thinking is a lot more helpful than thinking not thinking. And to tell the truth, Kazan obviously is very influenced by that. And I say that because there's a section of Zazen Yojinki that is really just quoting from Fukan Zazengi. So he says, when you sit, wear the cat's robe. Don't be careless. The cushion should be about 12 inches thick and 36 inches in circumference. Don't put it under the thighs, but only from mid-thigh to the base of the spine. This is how Buddhas and ancestors sat. You can sit in full or half lotus postures. To sit in the full lotus, he tells you how to do that. And sit up straight and don't lean. Don't lean against the wall. Put the tongue against the top of your mouth. Your mouth should be closed. Your eyes should be open. Not too wide, not too shut. Breathe deeply a couple of times. And now think of what is without thought. How can you think of it? Before thinking or non-thinking or beyond thinking. This is the essence of Zazen. Shatter obstacles and become intimate with awakening awareness. You know, and he talks about, actually, it's hard, he goes on at length about, and in more than one place, he actually repeats himself about problems that might come up in Zazen. So, if you're feeling sleepy or dull, how to respond to that? Wash your face, get up, do walking meditation, focus your mind here. If your mind is really scattered and you're really distracted, place your, sort of pay attention to the tip of your nose or pay attention to your hairline. Put your attention down in your hara, the center of the area just a couple of inches below your navel. Don't get excited because you have these great realizations. Don't get excited because you have these weird experiences. If you feel like you're floating, for example, and don't get excited if you feel strong emotions. Just on and on, all these things, especially this feeling like you've had these great realizations, he considers that sort of an illness that's caused by imbalances in the body. So you sit up straight and fix your breathing. You're not breathing correctly. So that's not the point here. The point is not to have realizations. It's not to feel certain things. It's not to figure things out. In fact, he says this isn't about realization or delusion, being confused or being aware. So that takes you back again to non-thinking, I guess. What is non-thinking? And he doesn't really go through to say this is what non-thinking is, but he comes back, he has some very interesting things to say. I think it's on the sixth page. Let's see. Throughout this essay, it's not organized in any normal sense. But he has he'll have a paragraph that you can just really imagine having been a Dharma talk that he gave or an instruction that he gave to a student. Look, this is what you're doing in Zazen. You're having problems with your Zazen. Here's how you deal with these problems. And at the top of that sixth page, he has a theme that he uses very much throughout the essay. Although we speak of practice, it is not a practice that you can do. That is to say, the body does nothing, the mouth does not recite, the mind doesn't think things over, the six senses are left to their own clarity and unaffected. So this is not the 16-stage practice of the hearers. That's classic Buddhist practitioners. Nor is it the practice of understanding the 12 nidanas. That's what, in classical Buddhism, that's what you were supposed to do. You were supposed to understand the 12 nidanas, how the mind works, how rebirth works, how clinging and suffering work. Nor is it the six perfections within numberless activities of the bodhisattva. It is without struggle at all. So it is called awakening or enlightenment. Just rest in the self-enjoyment samadhi of the Buddhas, wandering playfully in the four practices of peace and bliss of those open to openness. This is the profound and inconceivable practice of Buddhas and awakened ancestors. So he says over and over again in this essay that this is not something to do. You can't do it. So, but, and he keeps talking about it as coming home to rest. And coming home to rest to your original face or the self-enjoyment samadhi of the Buddhas, which are terms of art talking about the world as we experience it right now. Coming back to right now, resting right now. So, and that's kind of a challenge for us. Don't do anything. I mean, if I sit down here, my mind is going crazy. I'm all distracted. But he says, just keep sitting. Don't do anything, and your mind will calm down. But in that in itself, that experience of coming back right now, waking up, stepping outside of that usual thinking, feeling, clinging, wanting, not wanting, so that you're just here in this ordinary body in the middle of this room with a bowing mat and polished wood floor and an altar and people sitting on the black cushions. That is the Jijuyu Samadhi, the self-enjoyment samadhi. That is our original face. That's who we are before we start thinking of ourselves as this fixed person here when there's a world out there. So if you don't do anything, you know, what happens? And the answer is this, it arises. This is a practice of letting something happen, not getting in the way by any sustained effort, any sustained trying is just another kind of thinking and chasing after some ideal state or some experience that we want to have. So how do we do it? And the answer is kind of, I think, you know, I've already talked about this. I gave Zazen instruction this morning, and I've used all my best material already. So we are awakened already now. We are awakened Buddhas, not right now. It's not that we are inherently awakened so that all we have to do is do something and bam, right now we can become awakened Buddhas. We are awake. There's nothing that awakening and Zazen and practice, the awakened engagement with the world, adds to our experience right now. It's really a matter of not getting caught up in the things that take us away from the experience of being here right now. Well, how do you do that? And the answer is you know. You've already had this experience from the very first time you have sat and done Zazen. You've been sitting here, being aware of your posture, your breathing, what's going on. You get distracted and you come back. Bang. That's it. That is that experience. That is right now. The question is, it goes away immediately. And we start thinking, well, I think that was it. How do I do that again? And blah, blah, blah. How do I fix it? Well, you can't fix it. This is not about fixing the experience of this moment. If you feel bad, you feel bad. If you feel awake to that, if you feel confused, be with that. If you feel sleepy, be with that. Just don't do it. Just open to this moment. Just let go. Well, how do you let go? There's this 20th century Japanese Zen teacher, Uchiyama, who used to talk about, you know, opening the hand of thought, letting go like that. And you think, and that's pretty good. You know, how do I open my hand? Is there some technique for opening my hand? No, you just open your hand. And that's the same thing that happens with the thinking. We recognize what it was when we let go of the thinking and feeling and planning and trying to just be here. But it's something we do, and we can do from the very first time we sit on the cushion. When we keep trying to figure that out, well, how do I let go? I'm going to try to let go. It's not quite there. It reminds me of when I was a young boy, my father knew how to wiggle his ears, and I thought it would be really cool to learn to wiggle my ears. And I can tell you that you may be one of those people who can do it, and I eventually became one of those people who did it, but there are no muscles involved that you use for anything else. So figuring out what they are and figuring out how to move them is almost impossible. So I don't know how long. It may have been for years that from time to time I go, well, I'm going to try to wiggle my ears, and I keep straining or something like that. It didn't happen. Suddenly one day I figured out, oh, this is wiggling your ears. it's a little bit like that, except it's a lot easier sitting side saddle because you've had that experience. You've had that experience in daily life. You've had that experience now, sitting on the cushion, waking up, coming back, coming back, coming back. You don't have to do anything. You're just sitting here. You're just returning to this moment. That point is so important that Kazan even uses it as the opening sentence of the essay. He goes, sitting is the way to clarify the mind of experience and to rest at ease in your actual nature. Your actual nature is this, just here, right here, this moment that we are a part of. This is called the display of the original face and revealing the landscape of the background. And he jumps down to say, putting aside all concerns, shed all attachments, do nothing at all, don't fabricate any things with the six senses. So don't get rid of all your attachments. Let them go. Let thoughts come and go. Let attitudes come and go. Let emotions come and go. Let planning go. Just set it aside and do that. But how do we do that? I mean, most of the time we are caught up in our thinking and all sorts of mental activity. And so in our tradition, we take advantage of a hint that Kazan also gives, where he says, okay, if you're distracted, if your mind is going everywhere, you're scattered, there's several things you can do, but one of them is counting your breaths. Just breathe, and as you exhale, count your breath one. Breathe in, count your breath two, or just follow your breath. You go, well, isn't that a kind of doing? The answer is yes, sort of, but you can deal with it so that it's not that sustained effort of thinking, that sustained thinking. You're not sitting there zeroed in, focused on your breathing, trying to ignore everything else to have some clear awareness of your breathing. You're just sitting here aware of your posture, sitting here aware of what you're breathing, that you're breathing. An advantage of that is, in this practice, is ubiquitous. It's in all Buddhist meditation traditions, being aware of the breath. That focus on the breath calms down the mind, slows down the thinking, and in a way, you can only use a metaphor, it makes you less wrapped up in your thinking. It makes the thinking, the pattern of thinking, the whirling around of your mind more transparent so that you can see through it, see what's going on, find yourself right here. When we breathe, when we first start practice, I think we try pretty hard to really focus on the breathing. As our mind settles and we get a little more comfortable with it, it becomes just being aware of the breathing, just touching down. And finally, our mind gets calm enough so we're just sitting here. I'm sitting here and breathing. I'm just here. The thoughts are coming. I'm sitting here and breathing with everything that's right here. I am a part of this. And so I would suggest that as we had a few new people come for their first experience with Zazen today, I would suggest that you not try very hard to concentrate on your breathing, but take a light hand. Your breathing, be aware of your breathing. Focus on your breathing, but only, you know, give it 25% or 10% of your attention. And as your mind settles down, it becomes easier to be aware of your thinking, and you don't get carried away quite so often. Just the practice will lead you to a lighter and lighter and lighter touch until sitting just becomes, I'm sitting and I'm breathing. In the same way I'm sitting, I feel my legs. I'm sitting, I hear the sound of the air conditioning. I'm sitting, I smell the instance. I'm sitting, I see people sitting on either side of me. I see the wall in front of me. So that is, it's a very simple practice, but there's not a technique to do it. Even the breathing technique isn't really a technique. It's a way of, the breathing sort of reminds me, oh, I'm paying attention to my breathing. When I pay attention to my breathing, I pay attention to my body. I pay attention to what's going on here. And the sustained thinking that I might have been involved in sort of gets interrupted by paying attention to the breathing and brings me back to right here. But this is something that happens automatically. I think, and after you've practiced for a while, I would say, Jess, just see what happens. Just say to your, try saying, I'm just going to sit here. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to make any effort, and see what happens. Because what happens when we let go of our thinking is we just come back here. We find ourselves right here. It's our thinking, our sustained and deliberate mental activity that pulls us away from our experience of being here in the world. So that's kind of short. But what I would, I really suggest, everybody can take these copies of Zazen Yojin Ki back. There is a lot of really good stuff about practicing Zazen and issues about your practice, problems that might come up in your practice, how to do this. But always on that, it's not really doing something. It's getting out of the way. It's going to happen. It's something that that happens to us. And we can dispose ourselves to it, but it's not something we make happen. When we dispose ourselves to it, it's like remembering that we're here. Here we are. Oh, yeah, I am here. Yes, I am here. Yes, I am here. I didn't make it happen. I just recognized that here I am. It takes no effort whatsoever. It doesn't take a technique. So that may be very brief, but I hope you will read the Zazen Yojin Ki and get some inspiration from it, and that it will help your practice. That is my earnest wish. Thank you. Does anyone have any thoughts or questions or observations about their Zazen practice? Yeah, Bo.
Well, thank you for your talk. I think the breathing practice too, you know, it is a helpful reminder of like interconnectedness, you know, as well. Like you're breathing, you're kind of focused on your breath, and you realize just, I mean, it's like an obvious kind of realization, but like how much you need that, you know, like you wouldn't go on without the next breath, and the next breath, and the next breath. And so that's always helpful for me to kind of realize, in a way, to help with that letting go. Because you're like, it's a gift. It's a constant gift of like this life that I didn't decide to have once.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I find that helpful. That happens often when I focus on my breath as well.
I think, something else interesting for me about breathing and paying attention to breathing is there are some parallels to thinking as well, in that our breathing most of the time occurs automatically without any oversight from us, but we certainly can affect it. We can decide we're going to breathe deeply, I'm going to hold my breath, I'm going to breathe in a shallow way, all sorts of things like that. We have thinking going on all the time. I mean, you sit in Zazen and you watch this chatter going on all the time. But you can certainly say, okay, I think I'll think about dinner tonight. I'm going to have, you know, whatever, curried zucchini. Let's see, what's the best recipe for that? And you think it through. It's all directed, intentional thinking. But you can also let it go in the same way you let your breathing go by itself. You don't have to be caught up in that thinking or intentionally think about something in any sustained way. You know, you can limit your thinking to, you know, come back. Here I am. Anyway. Yes.
Yeah.
And how that really
is sort of suffering in itself, and sort of often acknowledged, but sort of
Yeah,
about that aspect of resting from that and giving yourself the opportunity to be compassionate with yourself to rest from that chatter.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, in a way, you know, it's just like Uchiyama Roshi says, when you're caught up in the thingy, it's like your mind is clenched in a way because it's been narrowed and focused. And there's a sort of muscular analog that's going on at the same time. And so when we open up, we do tend to relax. And Keizan says things like, well, Zazen is just an unoccupied mind in an unoccupied body. So it's not that it isn't going on, but you're not occupied with it. You're not planning it. You're not directing it. You're not focusing on it. You're not thinking about it or analyzing it, anything like that. And even Dogen says that Zazen is not a conscious endeavor. It's not an intentional thing. It's not something we do. It's not thinking. It's not feeling. It's not hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. It's everything, but letting it be. Yeah. Just an intention. Just a recognition. I'm going to let go. I'm going to wake up. Yes. Our problem is it isn't a normal, it's not an action, it's not an ordinary activity. We're not doing anything intentionally, it's not a mental, it's not a form of thinking, it's not a kind of feeling and so on. It's everything. It's a way, it's a very simple, straightforward, direct way of being with our experience. And it's hard to talk about it. And I think that with the Zazen Yojinki, there are things, I think there are phrases that you might find just very helpful to have the phrase with you as you sit, or just as you prepare to sit. That it's just, you know, it's resting at ease. Right now, coming home. He likes to say, it's coming home. Getting caught up in thinking and feeling or intentional planning. We've gotten somewhere else. We're in a sort of hypothetical, imaginary world, and then we come home to this moment. So it's easy to be confusing. Yeah. To try to talk about it.
Yeah. For me, it's sort of like it's like a computer, and it's hard for me to ignore it. I understand part of what you're saying, but it's like it's always going in there. You can't really turn it off. So it's hard not to engage with it, to relax and let it do its own thing, but not be in the depths. That's sort of how I struggle. I mean, it is a gift to have a brain, to have a brain, and it's hard not to engage with it.
Yeah.
It's a struggle.
Yeah. We just have to do it over and over again. But we do. We come back and back and back. We get distracted. We get caught up in the thinking, but we come back. Get distracted. We come back. Yes. Some kinds are very, very strenuous. Yeah. So there are, there may be thousands of techniques of Buddhist meditation. And some of them require a lot of effort. So, for example, in some Rinzai practice, Rinzai Zen practice, people will focus very, very hard, become extremely concentrated on the mukwan, focusing on mu. And in some kinds of their practice is, the really strenuous practices are often the ones that involve intense concentration, intense focus on either an object or a mental object. An imagined color, an imagined deity, a mantra, sort of so focused that you're not aware of anything else, with the aim of quieting the mind and bringing about certain kinds of experience, bringing about some sort of transformative experience or some other, at least very illuminating experience. And some are just very physically tough. There's a kind of Thai practice where people will sit and be aware of their breathing, but the whole point is to sit without moving in full lotus posture for long, long periods of time, said to sit through the pain. So just to feel excruciating pain until at some point, apparently, you come out of the other side and it doesn't hurt anymore. So it takes a lot of effort, a lot of willpower to do that, to convince yourself to do it. So, yeah. So this is just... this is one practice among many, but part of the thinking behind this is that just the practice itself is the Buddha's awakening. That there may be different kinds of experiences, but those may or may not be illuminating, but they can certainly be distracting and confusing and lead us astray. But just being here without grasping, without being caught up in our mental activity is the awakening. So awakening and enlightenment isn't about some specific vision of the world or some special experience of the world. It's just being open to and in the world. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Kind of like that relative to the, I don't know, kind of, yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's like a kind of like, makes me like go, oh, okay.
Well, you know, this was the 13th century. He was a man of his time. What he really wants you to do, and he says so, is he wants you to go practice in a monastery in the mountains. And some of those things that he talks about, don't do this, were really what he saw as abuses of monks who weren't involved in meditation practice. So they were hanging out at the near the king, the emperor, or at the government performing ceremonies and earning lots of money by performing ceremonies and chanting sutras and telling fortunes and telling people's horoscopes, all sorts of things like that. So all of that he saw as that's beside the point. You're wasting your time. So he does want you to stay away from that stuff. Go sit in a monastery in the mountains and do zazen. But yeah, I have to say, it really does jar me, as you can tell, when he said, well, don't eat anything live or hard or spoiled. And I'm going, well, okay, yeah. Anyway. Paula, did you have anything?
No, the only thing I keep coming back to was the breath, which I love practicing with my breathing. But through the years, whatever anxiety I might have had with sitting, because sometimes you want to practice, but you don't want to sit down, if that makes sense to people. So the breath, it never fails you. It's like a baby sleeping with a blanket. If I ever felt that way, just general anxiety about sitting, I knew I could go to my breath and that would pass. If I had anxiety about doing longer sittings, which can happen when you start doing those kind of things, I knew if I went to the breath, that anxiety would be lifted. If I had a hard time calming my mind or connecting to the computer, like Janet is a great metaphor for it, I knew I could go to the breath and that would be lifted. So it's kind of, for me personally, it's a go-to all the time, no matter what kind of anxiety might surround my sitting. So I really appreciate the talk because I love it.
Yeah. I don't know. At different times over the years, I've found that following the breath isn't, as an instruction, isn't something that was valuable to me. I mean, just who I am, I would find myself really focusing hard and ignoring what's going on. And I found it more valuable for me to think of it as sitting with the breath. I mean, I certainly just sitting and knowing, being aware that I'm breathing, not really focusing on following it necessarily, just checking on it from time to time. In the same way you would be sitting here and checking on whether you're sitting upright and are you sitting in a balanced way? Where are your hands? Are you holding the mudra right? Those kinds of things. Just checking the breathing. How's it going? And I found that very valuable. And checking on that is a way of helping the mind settle a little bit. And at the same time, settles down, opens up. Yeah. All right, we're done.